Land, pass, land, pass, land, Mox Diamond, Mana Crypt, Soul Ring, Arcane Signet, pass. Well, I thought I had a good opening hand, player four comments, but after that... Hello and welcome to another episode of Gemstone Mine. I'm John, and today we have another lesson from CEDH. CEDH is a metagame within the Commander format that sits at one extreme with highly consistent, highly efficient decks. Not all cards are equally powerful in all formats, or even in all metagames, but there are lessons to be learned from how people are using some of the most powerful cards available in Magic's history. And depending on your table, the first few turns of a Commander game can be some of the least interesting and engaging parts of the game. Really, one of the reasons I enjoy CEDH so much, powerful mana rocks mean we get ramp out of the way quickly and get to the more exciting stages of the game faster. At a lot of tables, it could be land go or land ramp spell go for the first 2, 3, or even 4 turns of the game. And there's not really very much in the way of threats being played or interaction being used. The game is frankly boring during this stage of the game. But a lot rides on your ability to navigate through the getting ready stage of the game. And before we can learn how to get ready, I just want to thank you for joining us this week. If you enjoy this or any of our other episodes, I hope you'll consider subscribing to the channel, giving us a like, or letting us know what you think in the comments. Now with that out of the way, let's get ready to get ready. We've talked about the stages of the game before, and briefly, the three stages of a game of Commander are getting ready, where you're trying to amass enough mana or other resources to enable your deck's basic game plan. All set up, where you have enough resources to be able to enact your game plan while also being able to interact with your opponents at the same time, being able to multi-spell. Finally, going for it is where you've achieved a critical mass of resources and you start to trade down on resources in order to shorten the clock your opponents are on. Our focus in this episode is on the getting ready stage of the game. The first stage, the place that's not really especially exciting, but optimal play and sequencing in how you play out your ramp pieces and set yourself up later can really help you come out of the stage faster and in better position relative to your opponents. And more so than any other stage of the game, your getting ready stage will be shaped heavily by how you choose your mulligans. Now, mulligans are something I consider to be a weakness of mine, as I come from a background with a lot of casual Commander, where the goal wasn't necessarily to have a good hand, but just to have a playable hand. And everyone just wanted to get the game going as fast as possible. Shuffle up, play a new game. So aggressively mulliganing for the best hand wasn't necessarily an important skill for me to learn. But it is a very important skill overall as you try to up your game, and one that at some point I really need to significantly improve. To help me with that, I sat down and wrote out an outline of the very basics of what I would need to look for in almost any opening hand in order to improve my skill at mulligans. There's also a great episode that Sage of Fables put out on their channel entitled Why You Should Mulligan Aggressively in Commander, which I highly recommend. There's also a great series of videos that Braden from CEDH Cast put out where he interviewed the pilots and brewers of a number of different CEDH decks and challenged them with 7-card hands to say, would this be a keep or a mulligan, and then asked them why. Really great resources to study, and ones that I looked at as I was trying to improve my game with mulligans. The more you learn about mulligans, the more you realize that, really, what makes a good opening hand are going to vary from table to table, and even deck to deck, but there are some fundamental questions to ask yourself when you're considering your mulligan, the most basic of which is very simple. Does it give you a plan for how you'll play the game? Do you have a way to get through the getting ready stage of the game and hit all set up? During the getting ready stage of the game, your goal is to accumulate the resources you'll need to enter the all setup stage of the game. And the all setup stage of the game is defined by interaction, particularly interaction with other players' game plans. Can you keep the Najeela player in check before she assembles a critical mass of warrior tokens? Are you ready to grind out from under stacks effects like Rule of Law? Or do you have the answers you need to break free? Can you get a value engine like Rhystic Study Online so as to keep up with the value of a commander like Gorvold? In the getting ready stage of the game, your goal is to reach this point in a timely manner. And what is timely really does vary from one table to another and one game to another. In CEDH, you're generally going to want to get there as quickly as possible, generally by turn 2 at least. Interaction during the getting ready stage of the game is going to be sparse, as most players will be constrained by either mana, cards in hand, or both, And if they are forced to interact during this stage of the game, it's often a significant blow to their tempo, as they may have to choose between going land Sol Ring pass and land Swords of Plowshares the Threat pass, which sets them up to be far behind on mana overall. Your plan is definitely going to be dictated by what the fastest deck at the table is going to be able to do. Part of the Rule Zero discussion that I think is most important is asking, well, when does your deck go for it? What is its critical turn? And asking your opponents how quickly their decks go for it can help to make sure that you're prepared with your opening hand. The Krenko player, for example, may report that they typically play Krenko on turn 4 and start activating it on turn 5. And that lets you know you've got those first 4 turns before you need to be ready to interact. But on the other hand, if they tell you they run a lot of powerful zero-cost artifact ramp and routinely are ready to tap Krenko on turn 3, you have 2 fewer turns to get ready to interact there. That's 2 fewer turns you have to ramp out. This informs the basic elements you'll want to establish during the getting ready stage of the game. Adequate mana to multispell in a timely manner. A path to get your game plan established, which often means resolving your commander, but may mean something different to each deck. A way to restock your hand after playing out your mana ramp, and interaction for early turn threats. We'll go through each of these elements in turn, but the more casual tables that you play at, the more you should be focused on numbers 1 and 2, whereas the more aggressively you're playing, the more cutthroat your table and the closer to CEDH it is, the more you really want to have more of elements of 3 and 4 in your opening hand as well. Starting off at the top, adequate mana to multispell means that you're able to develop your board and advance your game plan with protection against the threats your opponents may pose. Basically, the ability to cast a resource engine like Rhystic Study and then still hold up mana for Swords to Plowshares just in case the Voltron player starts looking at you funny. Or a casting of one of your synergy creatures like a Viscera Seer to establish a sac outlet while also holding up mana to Assassin's Trophy, a Grafdigger's Cage, when an opponent is tapped out and can't protect it. It also means that you have the ability to chain multiple spells together in a turn, which obviously in CDH, which has a lot of A plus B combos, is often necessary to score a win. But in the broader Commander metagame, it's also really powerful. Usually, once you're playing multiple spells in a turn, you're making big moves and challenging your opponents to keep up with you. Adequate mana to multispell does not necessarily mean that you will multispell, but you can advance your game plan with confidence while representing the ability to interact with your opponents. Passing with 2 blue mana open sends a pretty clear signal to your opponents that you're ready with some kind of counterspell for any nonsense they get up to. Take a look at your deck list and try to determine how much mana does your deck need to be able to both cast a draw spell and be ready to interact with your opponents. How much mana do you need to cast one of your synergy creatures or just one of your favorite cards in the deck and still be able to deal with something your opponents get up to? That's when you know that you've hit your all set up stage of the game, and that's kind of the number you want to look for to see if there's a path towards that in your opening hand. For example, that number is 3 in my Malcolm Kettis deck, as that's enough mana to be able to land Malcolm, and on the next turn play Kettis and attack and get 3 treasure tokens for the deal. At that point, the deck is all set up and I'm just trying to dig for a way to win the game. My idea of a good hand with Malcolm Kettis is to see a hand that shows me a very early Malcolm, usually the ability to cast it by ideally turn 1 and at the very least turn 2. At that point, I would be confident saying that I'm no longer getting ready, but I'm all set up. This leads to point number 2. Having a path to your game plan in your opening hand really helps as well. Many years ago, the Command Zone made the argument for choosing your ramp based on its ability to get your commander out turns early, which is a pretty solid example of your opening hand having a clear path to go from the getting ready stage of the game to being all set up. To be clear, not every deck's game plan revolves around their commander. Resolving other pieces may be more critical to getting things online. In my Trelosara Moondancer deck, for example, there's not really too much trouble getting Trelosara online. She only costs 2 mana. But the deck really wants a turn 1 Soul Sister, so that I can start scrying and pumping Trelosara as soon as I resolve her. Most of my opening hands that I want to keep will have that Soul Sister in hand before I can cast Trelosara and help smoothing my draws out with scries. Obviously, Trelosara is not a CDH deck, but a lot of the same lessons that I learned from studying how to mulligan for CDH also inform what I'm looking for in a good opening hand with this more casual deck. If your deck's game plan is not necessarily built around your commander, it's a good idea to think about the steps you need in order to get your game plan online. Is there a particular category of creature you may want to get in play? Krenko, for example, probably wants to get multiple goblins into play before resolving Krenko so that that first tap provides more bodies. Or maybe what they really want is to make sure that the turn after they cast Krenko, they're able to resolve either Impact Tremors or Purphoros in order to get plenty of damage in, whether their opponents have blockers or not. If you ever have one of those moments where you feel like your deck is really performing well, doing the things you want, but not necessarily there closing out the game, it's not a bad idea to look down at your board, look down at your cards in hand, and try to take a note of which cards really feel like your deck is revolving around. Those are the ones you'll be looking for to try to resolve to reach that all set up stage of the game, and the cards you would want to see either as part of your opening hand or with a clear path to them from your opening hand after you mulligan. Particularly as your games edge closer and closer to CDH power levels, you also have to recognize that ramp spells do put you down on cards. If you ever watched a game of CDH or played in one where someone goes land, Mox Diamond, Mana Crypt, Soul Ring, you don't always realize that all that mana came at the cost of them going down to three cards. Powerful ramp is, well, powerful. But being able to back it up with a way to restock your hand is also really important. Remember that cantrips like Preordain and Ponder, while nice, don't actually reload your hand, they keep you card neutral after resolving. But even a card as simple as Sign and Blood, which gives you two cards for the price of one, allows you to start the process of restocking. Ideally, you also want to start landing engine cards, which will draw you multiple cards over the course of a turn cycle, such as Rhystic Study or Mystic Remora or Sylvan Library in this case. One of the most powerful things you could potentially do in this scenario is to wheel after you ramp hard and basically empty out your hand. But remember, wheels can also be pay 0 mana, draw 7 cards for each of your opponents. You might be able to disrupt their play a little bit by forcing them to throw away a hand that they mulliganed hard for, but if you haven't watched it, Ken from Stacked EDH and several other creators did a pretty massive analysis of gameplay, analyzing whether wheeling was more likely to win you the game or lose you the game. Please be sure to check out that video, link in the description. The final element that we identified to consider is your ability to interact with those early game threats that your opponents might have, particularly for more aggressive, more cutthroat, and higher power games like CDH. If you don't respect an opponent's ability to win the game very quickly, very early, you're probably going to lose some games. Now, this matters less at more casual games where we're going to have a much later critical turn, so you will have more opportunities to draw into that interaction. But if you're playing CDH and you sit down across from somebody playing the Turbo Ad Nauseam deck, they're going to threaten that early win off the back of Ad Nauseam, and if you don't have a counterspell ready, and if neither of your opponents do either, well, you're probably going to lose. And even at more casual tables, just having a Swords to Plowshares ready for someone's Voltron commander can make you sit much more comfortably and more confidently while you ramp out. This is definitely most important at tables that are closest to CDH, and really, the cheaper your early answers are, the better. As we mentioned before, having to spend interaction during the getting ready stage of the game can be a major blow to your development. So the smaller the amount of mana that you need to invest to interact, the less it's going to stall your own development. Your opening hand is one of the most important elements which shapes how you will navigate through the getting ready stage of the game. But as you tune your deck's critical turn downwards and play games more closely resembling CDH, the more you're going to need to plan for the all set up and going for it stages of the game in your decisions to mulligan. At the most basic level, make sure that your opening hand has enough mana to get your game plan online and multi-spell. Make sure that you have enough ramp to get to the basic steps of your deck. But also having a clear roadmap from how your deck can go from the getting ready stage to the all set up stage, how you can actually execute on your game plan is also important to consider. In faster, more cutthroat games, having a way to both reload your hand after you empty it of ramp and maintain the ability to interact with the fastest threat at the table may be incredibly important. All of these are really useful things to consider when you're looking at your opening hand. And while your focus at a more casual game may just be on making sure you have a clear path with mana ramp, at more powerful pods, really important to consider all of these as part of your mulligan decision. It's also important to remember that a good hand is going to look different for each deck. So tell us, what does a really good 7 look like with your favorite deck? Let us know in the comments on YouTube, where we are Gemstone Mine Podcast, on Twitter,
where we are at Gemstone Mine MTG,
or via email, where we are gemstonemindpodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, I'm John, and this is Gemstone Mine.